Hi, I'm Jennifer, addict alcoholic. I thought Nina was going to tell the truth. So, okay. Oh, God, I'm so freaking nervous. It's not even funny. And I had all day to think about this, and I really wanted to take notes and, like, make sure I sounded perfect and everything, but I didn't because I honestly believe that when you speak, it should come from the heart, and it shouldn't be rehearsed because you never know how God's going to move through you and who you might touch through that. So I guess what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So what it was like was I grew up in a household that was addicts, alcoholics. I mean, my dad was an alcoholic. My family was all alcoholics, so it was normal to me. I didn't see anything wrong with drinking and smoking pot and, I mean, doing meth and stuff like that. It was around me from the time I can remember. I remember one 4th of July when we were young. I was like 4 or 5, and everybody was sitting around drinking. My Uncle Bill always made homemade wine, and they thought it would be funny to let us kids taste it. And I can remember taking a drink of that wine and then running around trying to find a napkin so I could wipe the taste out of my mouth because it was so disgusting, you know. And it was just one of those things that I started, you know, that was my first drink. And as I got older, it was pretty normal. My dad went into AA when I was 13. My parents were in the process of a divorce, and my dad decided to get sober and stuff. And in the process, he was like 3 months sober. He molested me once. And most people who know me and knew my relationship with my dad would never guess that. I went to therapy, and my brother still blames me to this day for my parents' divorce because it was never my dad's fault. It's just kind of weird. So I went to therapy, and I had made a decision then that, you know, he was my only dad, and I was going to forgive him for it and stuff. And we wound up having a great relationship after that. When I was 17, my stepdad chased me down and beat me, and I called my dad, and I was like, come get me. And my mom told me that day that if I left, I'd never come back. So me and my mom don't have a good relationship to this day. I mean, I love her, and I've made amends for my part in the past, but she just can't forgive me for going to live with my dad because she can't forgive him for what he did. So, and it's just sad. So, you know, I went and lived with my dad when I was 17, and I really started partying then because my dad didn't care what I did because I think he had that guilt. I mean, he was going to AA and stuff, and I think he still felt guilty for what he did, so he didn't care what I did. I'd disappear with this car for 3 days partying, and he would just call the local cops and be like, hey, if you see Jennifer, tell her to come home, you know, and I really took advantage of it. I remember one night when I was partying, I come home at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and he got up at like 5 o'clock in the morning to go to work, and he was like, gets up and he walks to the living room, and he's like, this place smells like a brewery. And I'm like, well, you know what his kids grew up with now, you know, just that quick. And, you know, it was probably not the right thing to say, but it was what I said at the time. And so I continued to party and stuff, and then I met my ex, who is the father of 2 of my children. And it was a very bad relationship, to say the least. I should have known from the start because, like, we had been dating, like, 3 weeks, and we got into a fight, and I went walking out of the house, and he come chasing me, and he said he accidentally bumped me and pushed me down into the gravel. Well, of course, me, oh, okay, I'll forgive you, whatever. And at that time, I really thought it was an accident, but looking back, I know he did it on purpose. We moved down to Florida, and started smoking crack. My one son at this time was a year old, and we were down in Florida and freaking smoking crack. My son was in a freaking crib probably most of the time. I was a horrible parent at that time, and we decided we didn't want to do that anymore, so we left and moved back up to Southern Indiana where my family was. And I just got a job waitressing, and I went to work one day, and I was like, what the fuck? I felt, sorry about my language, sorry, but I felt something move, and I went to a doctor and found out I was like 5 months pregnant, you know, and I had been smoking crack, and I did acid and everything, and I was so worried that this baby was going to come out all screwed up. And I didn't do anything but smoke pot the rest of my pregnancy. which the doctor said was okay. I don't know why. But thank God Jacob came out okay. You know, there was no issues. He's a smart kid. He's very bright. No birth defects or anything. And I, you know, thank the Lord for that every day. You know, and so then we moved to West Virginia and things just got really bad. And we started doing meth and moved to Arizona. We lived in, I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything because we saw the country. I mean, we were like hippies running around out west, camping on BLM, Bureau of Land Management, for free, working odd jobs. I mean, I got to see a lot of the country. It was beautiful, but it was not good for my kids. I mean, they'd say they had fun and stuff, but we fought all the time. I mean, he tried to throw me out of a moving car, shot at me. The kids watched him hit me and stuff. So finally, he decided that we're going to quit doing everything and start going to church and live with his dad. I was like, okay, I smoked pot when I met you. I'm not quitting smoking pot now. So we're at his dad's house one day, and I mean, I had never told this man that I hated him or anything. I mean, because I really did love him. I mean, even though everything was bad, he was the father of my kids, and I truly did love him. And then one day we were fighting, and I looked at him, and I was like, I fucking hate you. I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. And at that moment, something in me was like, I can't do this anymore. You know, I can't be with someone that I feel this way about. So at that time, my boys were like 5 and 4, and it's like, I'm leaving. And I looked at JT, my oldest, and I was like, me and your dad are separating. Do you want to live with your dad, or you want to come with me? And he was a daddy's boy, and he's like, I want to live with my dad. Which at 5, I don't know if they can really make a decision like that, but I was still using, so I thought it was a good thing to do. And then my Jacob, my 4-year-old, was like, well, I just want to stay with my brother, which was fine with me. So he had the kids, and it was like a mutual agreement. We were going to be civil, going to go to sign the papers that, you know, joint custody, all this. And when you sign the papers in West Virginia, there's like all this stuff you got to fill out about, was he ever domestically abusive and all that stuff. Well, my ex was like, well, don't tell him that because then we'll have to. So I'm like lying on all these papers. And then when we get to court, big surprise, I'm a drug addict. And he had filled out everything that I was a drug addict and everything like that. So, and I had lied on everything. So it made him look like the saint. And I was this horrible person. So the judge, of course, gave him full custody. And I had to go to treatment and all this stuff. So I was going to these classes. I was working third shift at a truck stop. I was going to these classes. I was using meth at the time because I was all fucked up. So I was get off work. I would do a line of meth, go to this class for my 12 weeks so that I could get my visitation rights with my kids. And yeah, that didn't go well. He moved out of state. I quit going. And then I moved up here because he was up here with my kids, and I wanted to be closer to my kids. And so we were going to work everything out. I was going to stop using and everything like that. And I had made some phone calls. I'd stayed with him for a couple of weeks. I'd made some phone calls, and then we had this huge fight because I didn't have a Wisconsin ID. I couldn't get into treatment. I had no Wisconsin ID. I was from out of state. I had no residency here, so basically they were telling me I couldn't do anything. So he took me to the Cathedral Center and dropped me off. You know, it was like, I'm done. And I was like, okay. So I was at the Cathedral Center. I met some girl, and we became best of friends. And then I moved in with her and started smoking crack again. And in January, New Year's Eve, 2000, the new year was 2006, so it was New Year's Eve 2005. Me and this girl had went to this hotel with this guy, and this was my breaking point. I had, and it's kind of weird how I don't know why this didn't click before. I mean, because I had sold myself all throughout my using career. I was a dancer. I mean, it did whatever, but I never actually like was like, here's the money for having sex with me kind of thing, you know? I never looked at it as prostituting myself until I look back now that I was prostituting myself the whole time, you know? But that was my breaking point. New Year's Eve, it was like, I don't want to be this person. I don't want to be the person that is selling their soul to the devil, is how I felt. That incomprehensible demoralization was my bottom. So New Year's Day, I packed my stuff up, which was this backpack of stuff. I left clothes. I just grabbed a couple of outfits, my hairbrush, and I walked down to the Cathedral Center warm room because they didn't have any space available. So I had to stand in line at 9 o'clock at night to get into their warm room, which is only from like 9 o'clock at night till 5 o'clock in the morning, which was great because I had plans to go to Impact the next day. So I went to Impact, walked from the Cathedral Center to Impact on 6th and National to be there by 7 o'clock in the morning to be one of the first three or five people in line so that I could get a drug assessment. Their assessment was that, yeah, I needed help. They had suggested some day treatment because I wasn't as at high risk as somebody that was pregnancy and stuff like that. You know, at that time, I didn't know I was pregnant. So I went into Salvation Army homeless shelter over on Walnut or wherever it is, and I was doing day treatment. And then on like January 21st or something like that, I found out I was pregnant with Joseph. And I was continuing to smoke pot, you know, and going to day treatment because I wasn't ready to quit smoking pot. I just didn't want to smoke crack anymore because that's what made me, you know, do the stuff that wasn't good. So I was going to day treatment, smoking pot, and dropping dirty. Then, so it was, I think it was February 26th because I had an RSC worker, and they called me into this office, and they're like, Jennifer, you're pregnant, and you're dropping dirty. All of a sudden, I was more important now because I have another life that I'm looking out for. It's not just me. So my RSC worker was like, we think you need to go into residential. And I'm like, I don't need to go into residential. You know, I really didn't think I did. But then I had this moment of, wait a minute. Maybe I should listen to these people. They probably have these jobs for a reason. I'm probably should listen to what they're saying. So I took their advice, and on March 1st, which is my sobriety date, March 1st, 2006, I went into Meda House. And I did what they told me to do. You know, I went to their classes, I went to the therapy, I went to the group therapy. You know, I started working the steps in there. I didn't do my fourth step in treatment. I didn't trust the girls in there, I have a lot of trust issues. And I had seen people that had did their fourth step in there, and then the girls the next day talking about it, and I was like, I ain't freaking telling these bitches that stuff. They don't need to know, because I don't want them talking about my stuff. But, you know, I started going to different meetings. I went to a couple AA meetings, and I started going to NA, actually. I had tried to get a sponsor in NA, and that didn't go well. So then I get out of residential, like, June of 2006, and I went into the Hope House on 2nd and Orchard because I couldn't get a job because I was like 6 months pregnant. So I had no income. So I couldn't pay rent or anything because I didn't have any kids or anything. I couldn't get any state assistance. So I went into the Hope House because I could live there for free till I had Joseph and then I could start looking for work and stuff. So I was walking from 2nd and Orchard to 6th and Washington every day to day treatment, Monday through Friday for 4 hours a day. And stayed in the Hope House, and yeah, it was fun. So I'm like, go to my day treatment one day, and I was like having, well, I guess labor pains. My RSC worker's like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm having contractions. She's like, how far apart are they? I'm like, 7 minutes. And she's like, don't you think you should go to the hospital? I'm like, no, I'm not having this baby today because Joseph wasn't due for like another month. You know, so I'm like, I'm not having this baby today. And she's like, no, I'm not asking. You're going to the hospital. So she took me to the hospital. Well, Joseph wound up coming that day, about a month early. So he was considered one day premature. Something that has to do with the fact that I did use early on in my pregnancy. I smoked like a freaking train when I was pregnant with him. So they ran all these tests and everything. And thank God he seems to be okay. Overall, he's okay. You know, we're finding out now he might have some issues, but, you know, that could be related to that, but whatever. Overall, he was born healthy, you know, and stuff. And so I was in the Hope House, and I was doing okay. I wasn't going to meetings because I quit going to meetings because I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know about CA. I mean, Jan had bought some meetings into the Meta House, but I really didn't pay attention to CA then. I was going to NA, couldn't find a sponsor, quit going because of some things that were said. If I had anything, I would have known that it was that person to keep going to meetings, but as a sick person, I was like, oh, I'm not going to NA anymore because these people suck. So I just quit going to meetings. So I was like 10 months sober, and I was in the Hope House, and there was two people in there with me at that time that were going to CA meetings, and they had been trying to get me to go to meeting, and finally I was like, fine, I'll just go to shut them up. One of them is in this room today, actually. But yeah, so I finally went to a meeting with them. It was Thursday night, Vision for You, and Paul and Tracy took me there, and Paul introduced me to Sherry J as, this girl has 10 months sober and she doesn't have a sponsor. And Sherry's like, oh, really? Don't you think you should do something about that? Oh, no, not really. Well, by the end of the meeting, I had asked Sherry to sponsor me. Now, procrastination is a big problem of mine, and when I came into these rooms hearing people talk about the fourth and fifth step, it was terrifying. I mean, I was scared to do those steps, and I was a procrastinator, so it was really easy to put it off. It took me like another 5 months to the steps to do my fourth and fifth step, which is horrible. But, you know, the important thing is to do these steps, you know. I made a connection, you know, with my higher power. First, I used the group, because I had had some real animosity with God. When I was out there, you know, I had stood in my living room after everything with my ex, and I was like telling God, go the fuck away. Get out of my life. I don't want nothing to do with you. I don't need you. You do me no good, you know. And then when I was out there using it, my car broke down. I'd lost my place and everything, and I was like cursing God on the side of the road when my car broke down. I'm like, what the fuck else can you take from me? You've taken everything from me, you know, and I really had nothing. I had no place to live. You know, I had no car anymore. I had no job. I was just broke. Well, that night, the dog ate my dentures. So don't really ask God if he can take anything else for you, because he will find something. So, yeah, that was awful. So you know. So when I told Sherry this, she's like, you know, you have time to make that connection, but you need to find something. So I looked around this room, and I saw a bunch of people that were clean and sober, having fun, living life on life's terms. Not saying that everybody in here had it great every day, but you weren't using. And to me, that was a power greater than myself. It was something I could hold on to. It was something tangible to me. And it worked for me until I could find that connection in my fourth step when I worked that resentment that I had with God. You know, I really had to look at, you know, and it was never God abandoned me. It was I had chose to leave him, you know, and I didn't like the answers that he was giving me. I still don't like the answers he gives me sometimes, but I can accept it today, you know. So, yeah, and then I had amends to make. I had screwed some people over. One of the hardest amends to make was to my kids. And I'm still making amends to them, you know, at times for things that I've done, you know, and stuff. So, and it's so important to work these steps. I mean, I seen a thing on Facebook the other day, and it was kind of cute. You know, we have all these little cliche sayings, one day at a time and stuff. And it was like all these little sayings, you know, but the big book thumper was down in a hole and they were trying to dig him out, you know, because all these little cliches won't keep us sober. Working these steps is what will get us clean and get us sober. I know that's what worked for me. I know it's worked for most of the people that I know that are clean and sober in this room. It's not, you know, just going to meetings. It's working these steps, you know. All those little cliches help, but working the steps is what actually gets us clean and sober and helps me stay clean and sober. So today, I had some rough patches in my sobriety too. There was a while, you know, when I first come in, I was like, oh, gung ho, yeah, let's do this, you know, and life sucks and I'm ready for everything to change, you know, and I had got involved. You know, I was secretary, GSR, you know, I stepped up and became a delegate, and, you know, the stuff was great. I learned a lot about the traditions and the concepts as a delegate, which are an integral part of this program. One of the things that was really depressing to me was when I was like 2-3 years sober, a lot of meetings started changing their formats and cutting out readings and stuff like that. And I noticed the traditions. When people were cutting out readings at the meetings, it was the traditions that they were cutting out. But the traditions are so important. That's what keeps this fellowship together, you know, and the steps are important, but for the fellowship to grow, the traditions are important, you know. It doesn't say that, you know, we have to stay clean to keep coming to these meetings. It just says we have to have a desire to be a member, you know. I was fortunate. This is my first time in these meetings, and I stuck it out, and I didn't relapse. But anybody that has the desire, it doesn't matter. They're welcome here, you know, and that's so important. The traditions are. Concepts are great, you know, all part of it, you know, but yeah, so anyways, in my recovery, I had some rough patches. My boyfriend relapsed, my best friend relapsed, I was angry, my dad passed away, I lost a niece who at 4 months old to SIDS. I didn't have to use. I haven't seen my kids in 2 years, my oldest two boys, but I'm still sober today, you know. Unfortunately, you know, my ex is a sick person. I like to say asshole, but in the book it says he's spiritually sick. So, you know, he's spiritually sick, and I would love to say that I pray for him. And there for the longest time I did pray. I would pray that God would change his heart, change him. And about a year ago, I realized that, you know what? I'm praying for the wrong thing. I can't pray for God to change his heart. I got to pray for God to change my heart. Because that's the only thing I can change is myself and my acceptance of the situation. You know, I don't like it. You know, that's one of those things that God hasn't answered that question the right way to me. And I don't like it. But, you know, I accept it. You know, my kids are healthy. They're overall happy. You know, I am friends with my one son on Facebook, despite his dad not liking it. You know, it sucks. It's shitty, you know, but it is what it is. He's getting married June 21st. I am invited to the wedding. I won't be able to go to his graduation, unfortunately. I'm still working on that because I haven't accepted that answer as a no yet. Because sometimes I gotta try the hard way and see. But yeah, I love my life today. I have my struggles, but overall I'm happy. I'm gonna get married. I'm really happy. So, I try and stay involved. I mean, there for a while when things got rough, I wanted to stick out my commitments and I didn't want to let you guys down and step away. You know, I was doing helpline, I was a delegate, and, you know, I was so messed up in my head, and I thought that, you know, that I had to keep these commitments and then I couldn't step away from them. And then I realized that I'm only half-assed doing them. I'm not giving them my 100%. I'm doing you guys a disservice. So I stepped away from them all, as much as I hated to. And it was more my pride that didn't want me to step away, you know, because I should be able to do this. I should be able to. And I just couldn't pull myself out of that funk, you know. The last 9 months, last 6 to 9 months, I've really been asserting myself more. I've been going to more meetings than I was, because there for a while I wasn't going to any meetings because I didn't want to. I didn't want nothing to do with you people. I was just angry, you know. But I've started, you know, I've learned today that it's okay to not be okay. I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to do everything perfect. You know, it's okay for me to be screwed up, you know. God likes us imperfect. He kind of works with us. So, you know, and I'm learning that I don't have to do everything right, and I don't have to have all the answers. You know, I always want to be perfect. I want to be able to answer the questions. I want to have the right answers, you know. I want to do the right thing, you know. But I've learned that I don't have to. I don't have to have all the answers, and it's okay today. You know, I love this fellowship. You know, this is my home. I have been going to CR lately, which is Celebrate Recovery, because my higher power today is Jesus Christ, and I have to make a connection with him And I have to keep that connection. And so I do that through church and some other things, because we all have our own higher power in here, you know, and that is for each of us to decide. But I need to connect with my higher power, and sometimes in this room I don't feel like I can make that connection with my higher power, so I have to go to like-minded people to find that connection, you know. And from the beginning, one of the things that has always stuck with me was when I was in recovery was, you know, there's a lot of fellowships out there. I call CA my home. You know, some people call NA their home. Others call AA their home. You know what? I don't care what you call your home if it gets you clean and sober. You know, I love CA. It's my home. But if it's not working for you, go someplace else if it's going to help you stay clean and sober, because that's the main thing. We're saving our lives here. And if you're not able to save your life here, find it somewhere. You know, work the steps. Get a sponsor. Make that connection with your higher power. You know, just do the best you can to stay sober and do it one day at a time. It's not always going to be easy, but you know what? Life ain't easy. You know, and I think that's all I have. Thanks.